Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Windbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Michael Tim, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-627-6008, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
Hello, Fran. And as you mentioned, we will be having Michael Tim on in a few moments. He wrote a book, his third book, which is called The Afterlife Revealed, What Happens After We Die. So if you'd like to hold on a few minutes and we'll find out. There was a very disturbing story in the news, which some of you may be already be aware of, that an indigenous tribe in the Amazon near the Peruvian border is believed to have been totally wiped out. You know, a tribe of about, 200 people that survived, hundreds of years, and it's believed that they were attacked and massacred by drug lords who were going to raise the land and start using it to grow, coca leaves and so forth. But, in reading a little bit more about it, there's about 67, they said, that identified such tribes of a few thousand people in the area. And, when I read the story, it's so disturbing, and I know that there are atrocities that happen every day and senseless killing and murder and so forth. But this one, you just can't wrap your head around. These were people that were totally earth-loving people. They have no contact whatsoever with the outside world. They have no axes to grind. They have no egos, and yet they meet this disaster. I mean,
And I just want to point out, because I'm always the devil's advocate, particularly when it comes to today's media, which apparently is where you got this story from, is that the media, and we've seen that with the recent issue with Rupert Murdoch, is that we're being fed information that people want us to see. We're also seeing in the world, and here comes my political commentary, corporations taking over left and right. Now, if you read as much as I read about these indigenous areas in other countries, the big corporations in the United States are going into these areas and are somehow, in the middle of the night, making these people, quote-unquote, disappear so that they can knock down the rainforest, so they can build the crop areas where they can now manufacture crops cheaper than they can in the United States and ship this stuff along.
Yeah, well, there's no question that, the big corporations are motivated by profit, and it's been a serious problem, for years with these tribes. I agree with you that there has been, a systematic plan, taking place. But,
Just to interrupt you, because I think it is an important topic, and it had been covered on some of the major networks in documentaries where there were large corporations going in and doing things in these countries that were illegal. And they continued to do it because they were paying off the governments of that area.
Yeah. Well, my point is that, there are many, many reasons why there are conflicts in the world. And it could be because of religion. It could be because of power. It could be because of, resources and so forth. This is, you know, pure greed, you know.
Pure greed.
And you wonder if, you know, since these people have messages to convey to us, as those of you familiar with Janet Mayer would know, she channels...
Janet, who will be on Mediums and Messages next Thursday.
Right, and I wonder, you know, her thoughts on this. But, you know, here are people that, that are of the earth. You wonder whether at some point the Mother Nature is going to just revolt, if they haven't already.
Mother Nature is revolting, and we are seeing sunstorms. They're being reported more and more frequently. We had one last Friday that did a lot of damage. Some people in some areas lost internet because of it. And this is all Mother Nature saying, I don't think so, guys. You're getting out of control.
Well, listen, you know, we believe that there's some, that ancestors, their ancestors, as well as our own ancestors, have some play in the workings of the universe from other dimensions, and we'll see what plays out from.
And also some knowledge as what's to come. I mean, I'm waiting for the Mayan calendar to end in December of 2012.
Yeah, well, maybe that calendar will end, but I don't think that we're going to have any dire circumstances.
Well, you're seeing a shift. It's based
a gradual shift. Yeah,
it's based on the stars and the universe, and you are seeing a shift in the planetary alignments, and that may very well have been what they were watching on that calendar.
Yeah, well, meanwhile, I'm still paying my bills through 2013.
Go right ahead. I'm going to go find a cave someplace.
Okay. All right, we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to have our guest with us, Michael Tim. So stay with us, and we'll be back in about 3 minutes. Thanks.
The Forever Family Foundation will be hosting its much-sought-after annual fundraising event, Night of Mediums, on 11-11-11 at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in New York at 7 p.m. Enjoy a scrumptious dinner while seated at a table of only 12 people as a Foundation-certified medium joins you following dessert to conduct spirit communication for your table only. It's a terrific opportunity to not only get readings in an intimate setting, but to enjoy a good meal and help the Foundation at the same time. For reservations and information, call 631-425-7707. Again, that's 631-425-7707. Or visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windrige.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tuning in, our guest tonight is Michael Timm. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Bob?
And Michael Timm is a longtime journalist. He's also a historian and author, and he has a special interest in mediumship and survival of consciousness. He is vice president of the Academy of Spirituality and Paranormal Studies and also editor of their quarterly magazine, The Searchlight. His articles have appeared in many journals and publications. He writes a regular blog, which incidentally you can follow at whitecrowbooks.com/Michael Timm. It might be easier just to Google Michael Timm. It's T-Y-M-N, and it'll come up. He's the author of three books, Running on Third Wind, The Articulate Dead, and his new book, The Afterlife Revealed. Welcome, Mike.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
And it's always our pleasure. You know, I mentioned some of the books, and some of our listeners may be familiar with your prior book, The Articulate Dead. How does the new book, The Afterlife Reveal, you know, differ from your prior book, and what were some of the reasons that you wrote it?
Yeah, well, The Articulate Dead was primarily about the evidence for the survival of consciousness, and mostly about the early evidence coming through the researchers of yesteryear, Sir Oliver Lodge and Frederick Myers and James Hislop and Richard Hodgson and so forth. But this book is more about the nature of the afterlife, not so much evidential, but what came through. As you know, there are basically two types of mediumship. There's the evidential type, which is also called the circular type, and then there's the teaching type that comes through more advanced spirits like Silver Birch and White Eagle and so forth, and it's not so much evidential, although there are some evidential aspects to it, but that's basically the difference. The first book is about evidence. This is about what the nature of the afterlife is like.
Yeah, and the subtitle of the book is, you know, What Happens After We Die. So in the book, I mean, it's really, you go into great detail and try to interpret some of the messages that have come through. You know, Mike, virtually all religions, you know, speak of other realms and to some degree, you know, that we enter after our physical deaths. And you know, they have their own depictions and rules and so forth, and yet a lot of the messages and descriptions that you write about that were channeled through these advanced spirits, they don't necessarily jive with Orthodox religion. So, and what are some of the differences between the Orthodox religious views on an afterlife and what we learn from these advanced spirits?
Orthodox religion, or at least most Protestant denominations, believe in a dichotomous afterlife, that you have a heaven and a hell, or as I say in the book, humdrum heaven or a horrific hell, and that's pretty much it. You go to one or the other, and there's no in between. Of course, Catholics believe in purgatory, which is sort of a middle ground, but not the middle ground that came out of what might be called spiritualism of the 19th century, which in effect, told us that there are many realms, as Jesus said, many mansions in the afterlife, and that we go over to the other side just as we leave, you know, this life. And so that there are multiple realms. I mean, some of the spirit teachers say there's seven realms, seven planes, seven spheres, whatever you want to call them. I think that's more for symbolic purposes, just so we can try and get a perspective on it. But we do seem to have quote many mansions, as Jesus said, not the humdrum heaven and horrific hell of Orthodox religion.
Mm. Yeah, I never really thought about it that way until actually I read your book, and it was thought provoking in that respect. Where, you know, a lot of people live their lives, you know, and they figure they follow the rules and then they're going to have this eternal existence, you know, in heaven. But what they're told is that, you know, they're going to be, you know, sitting in the clouds with harps and people flying around with wings and having this very angelic existence. And as you point out, it really sounds pretty boring. I mean, is that something really we should aspire to? You know, and I appreciated when you wrote that because it makes a lot of sense. You know,
I think that's the problem with Orthodox religion is that it's not really anything to look. You know, the afterlife is not really anything that appeals to people. I mean, to picture ourselves, you know, living for eternity and, you know, strumming harps and praising God 24/7 is just not something that appeals to most people. But once you really dig into the messages that have come through various mediums over the past 150 years, you see that it's, you know, a very active afterlife. At a certain point, if we can again put it in seven spheres or seven realms, they say that most people, the average decent person, you know, ends up on the third sphere, what might be called Summerland by the spiritualists, and things are pretty much the same there as they are here. But once we start going up to the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh realms, it's more or less beyond human comprehension. So most of the information we have coming through is about the first three realms, and you know, the first two being the first realm might be called what religion calls hell. It's sort of a fire of the mind where the people or souls are earthbound and some of them not even aware that they're dead. And the second realm is what I call stupor land. You're sort of half awake and half asleep and in a stupor, and you're awakening gradually to that third realm, but not quite there.
So, I mean, the messages seem to communicate that the way that we, our advancement, our soul's advancement, and the way that we live our lives in the physical affect, so to speak, our placement, you know, when we cross over. You know, so we might be in different dimensions with different spheres based upon our spiritual development.
That's my understanding. That's the message that I get. That we go over just as we are. And one of the terms I borrowed from Professor Robert Hare, who was a researcher back in the one of the first researchers back during the 1800s. He called it a moral specific gravity. And in effect, the moral specific, we form that moral specific gravity during our lifetimes based upon our, you know, the spiritual consciousness that we develop. And that moral specific gravity pretty much determines where we end up, where we start out. Let's say we start out with them, then we can progress from there. Once we reach that point.
So the moral specific gravity, some might equate that with, you know, vibrational levels, some might think of it as karma. I mean, would you say it's a similar concept to that of karma?
Yeah, I think it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Professor Hare defined it as the ratio of density of our positive deeds and thoughts to the density of our negative deeds and thoughts, and said that when the positive deeds and thoughts far outweigh the negative, there's a high moral specific gravity, and where the negative deeds and thoughts far outweigh the positive, there's a low moral specific gravity, with many degrees between those two extremes. And he also said that this, as he was told by spirits, that this moral specific gravity sort of manifests in our aura or energy field, and that is what determines our initial place in the afterlife. That's pretty hard to conceive, but when you think about it, that a computer chip can hold all the information that it does, why not? Why can't our auras or energy fields, capture all that, what's gone on during our lifetimes and store it there?
Yeah, and people, we've been reading about the Akashic records and even listening to many of today's physicists, they're sounding very spiritual when they talk about the science, physics.
Yeah.
And we are talking with Michael Tim, the author of The Afterlife Revealed. The number here is 1-888-627-6008. So, Michael, I take it that you think it's important not only to believe, in survival, but it's important for us to understand, the nature of the afterlife. Why is that important?
Well, according to various polls, 80-85% of Americans believe in an afterlife. I think that's a bit of an exaggeration. I don't find that 80-85% of the people I know believe in it. Although, a large percentage of them don't even give it any thought. And most of the religious people I know, they don't give it any thought. They still lead materialistic lives and hedonistic lives even. So I think once you... the problem with them is that they don't, the afterlife is not something that they would necessarily look forward to. And so they, everything is living in the moment, living for today, living for the here and now. And I believe that you should live, live in the moment, live in the here and now. But at the same time, as I say in the book, I think you really have to live in eternity, which to me means living in the past, present, and future all at the same time. And once you have that, feeling that there is something beyond this life, then this life becomes, it's much easier to live in the moment when you understand there's something after this life.
Right, and from what you were saying before, it's not only the realization that you continue on, but that your actions may very well, affect you as you go through this continuum of life, just believing in the afterlife, you could say, I used to worry about that when we used to try to present all this evidence for survival. I used to say to a friend, so what if people just, they look at the evidence and then they go out and they rape and pillage because they say, okay, it doesn't matter what I do, I'm just going to continue on.
Right.
Yeah, so, and as your book, points out, there is certainly appears to be a link, a correlation between our actions and our future development.
Right.
Yeah.
The atheists will tell you that we can live moral lives regardless of there being a God or an afterlife. And I think most people, I don't know about most, maybe half the population can live a fairly moral life, but, there's the other half that, Kierkegaard called the Philistines, who are sort of tranquilized in the mundane or the trivial, and, life is all about having fun. They don't give much thought to the meaning of life, and when they reach sort of what's called the threshold of despair, that's when they start, committing criminal acts and so forth. And so I think it's, you know, it's important for a good percentage of the population to understand that there is an afterlife. There's the other half that, you know, can lead a moral life without believing in the afterlife. But as they get older, you know, that they get into a sort of a melancholy state. And a lot of my friends I know who don't believe in anything beyond this life, they're just sort of drifting and living a very negative or pessimistic life because they expect to be extinct when they die.
Yeah.
And that brings a certain melancholy attitude about, and so I think it's much more important in the latter part of life. You can go through the first half of life, the first 50 years or so, you know, so wrapped up in what you're doing with your job, with your family, with your hobbies and so forth, that you don't really give it much thought. And you know, I was of that mindset. I really didn't start thinking about this until I was about 52 years old or so.
Oh, really? You know, you certainly have a lot of very good sources of the information in your book. And as I'm sure you questioned in your own mind, you know, as you read all of this deep and profound information. I mean, can we really know that the messages are coming from, sources other than the medium or the channeler's mind, you know? Do you still question that, or you...
Oh, no, I question it, and I think that, you know, I think we go to the New Testament. The Old Testament seems to say you shouldn't listen to the dead, and the dead know nothing, and so forth. We may have discussed this, and when I discussed my first book, what seems to have been missing there is that, you know, the translation, when they say the dead know nothing, the original Hebrew was that the spiritually dead know nothing, and they were talking about, you know, earthbound spirits and, you know, low-level spirits know nothing. But, you know, Orthodox religion has taken that passage in Deuteronomy or Ecclesiastics, wherever it is, a couple of them say the same thing and said, well, you know, we shouldn't listen to mediums because, you know, the dead know nothing, and the Old Testament says that, we shouldn't be talking to the dead. But then we go to the New Testament and we have various passages that seem to suggest that, you know, it is okay. In 1 John 4:1, I think it is, it says we should test the spirits, whether they are of God. So how can you test them if you don't listen to them?
Yeah, well,
you know,
my point,
that's one. And,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, my point was not who was communicating the information, whether it was an advanced spirit or a low spirit, but that it's, of course, the many people would say, well, look, this is just stuff that's made up by a wise person in the physical, the medium, and the medium is giving us this information. So, I mean, there's no absolute proof, but I take it that you're pretty convinced that these are highly developed spirits that are communicating the information.
Well, and not necessarily in all cases. I mean, I look at a lot of the I try to pick the most credible mediums, at least from the past, those that were studied by some of the researchers, like Eileen Garrett and Geraldine Cummings and Gladys Osborne Leonard and so forth. And if they were able to produce evidential information and at the same time produce, you know, the teachings, then that gives them a certain credibility. And also there were others like Pearl Curran, who produced Patience Worth. I mean, how all, you know, I don't know how many of the listeners are familiar with Patience Worth, how all that wisdom could have come out of a person who had no more than an eighth grade education is, you know, beyond my grasp. And so to me that lends to the credibility of the person. If the person had no training, education in all of this that, you know, is coming through them, then that sort of says something, I think. And it's not any just one, but the accumulation of all this, when the same messages come through different mediums who never knew each other, then that says something. And I think that's why the older mediums are are better in that respect. There's always the argument that modern mediums, you know, have read all this someplace else and are just repeating what they've read. But when you go back to the older mediums that didn't read this or didn't have this available to them, then you got to begin to wonder if, you know, it wasn't real.
Right. When we talk about talking about mediums and today's mediums, most of the mediums today are mental mediums, which are different than a lot of the historical mediums, that you write about. But one thing that you wrote about in the book that caught my eye was that the possibility that it's not very simple to communicate from the other side. I think that's a given. So there's a possibility that spirit entities have their own mediums or interpreters as they attempt to communicate with us. I mean, did you find that in your research?
Especially trans mediums. I mean, I'm not really sure about, the modern clairvoyance and clairaudience, whether, how the controls work in there, but the well-known mediums of the past, like Leonora Piper and Gladys Osborne Leonard and Eileen Garrett and others, they all had a, quote, control spirit. And in effect, there were four parties in those communications. There was the sitter, the person on this side who was visiting the medium. Then there was the medium. And then there was the spirit control. And then there the communicator. So what happened is the communicator would, in some way, the communicator was not able to get through the medium himself or herself. There's apparently, a lot of difficulty in communicating from that side, just as there is from this side. So they have this control who is in effect a medium on that side, interpreting what they're saying and sending it through the medium on this side to the sitter. So in effect, there are four parties involved.
Right, and they all have to be in sync, so to speak.
Right.
And as you point out, a lot of people today, probably because of the portrayals in the media, they think of a medium as having like a direct phone line, that the messages should be all clear and precise, and that's just not the way it works.
No. Yeah. I'm sure you've seen the Lisa Williams TV pro. I think it's most of them are all old now. I don't know if she's still on, but I was watching a rerun not long ago. It was from a couple of years ago, I think, and they had this family of there's two sisters and a brother, and Lisa Williams was giving them all these evidential messages from their mother, which they seemed very impressed with. And then one of the sisters says, "Well, isn't my mother giving you her name?" And Lisa said, "No, I can't get her name." And the sitter's jaw just dropped. Like, how can you get all that information, not get a simple name? And I could just hear all the skeptics who might have been watching that laughing. How can't she get it? Why can't she get a simple name when she get all that other information? So she must have researched a lot of material, on these people before they came on the show. But the answer to that is, if she's going to research all this information, surely she would have got the name of the person first.
Right. I know. And that is one of the things that I took from your book. One of the communicators was describing the way that it was, that ideas and feelings and personalities are a lot easier to communicate than a name, because a detached word or a name doesn't have a link to a train of thought. And that made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I think that was Sir William Barrett, who was one of the pioneers of psychical research. He was a physicist and actually was the man behind the Society for Psychical Research. After he died in 1925, he started communicating with his wife, Florence Barrett, who was actually a physician and dean of the Women's College of Medicine in London. And she had, she wasn't really into this too much before Sir William died, but she was becoming a believer. And she had questions, is this real? I'm supposedly hearing from my husband, but how do I know it's real? And at that time, Sir William said, "Well, this was, I think this communication came through Gladys Osborne Leonard. He pointed out that there's a tear in the wallpaper in my room, and he noted that, you know, Lady Barrett just had it fixed the week before.
Right.
Now, this is something clearly that, you know, Gladys Osborne Leonard would not have known about, a little tear in the wallpaper that had been fixed. And
absolutely.
So that more or less convinced her, but at the same time, you know, Sir William told his wife, he says, I'm having a hard time communicating. He says, I can get ideas through to you, but I can't get, you know, if I try to tell you my name, you know, I'm having a hard time telling you my name because it's not an idea or a symbol that I can, you know, get through.
Right. Yeah, I perfectly understand. We're going to take a short break, so stay with us. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Michael Tim.
Is there chocolate in the afterlife? Don't miss the 5th Annual Forever Family Foundations Conference on Saturday, November 12th at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in New York. This all-day conference features presentations by medical doctor Lee Bounum, offering scientific evidence of an afterlife, and paranormal evidence by noted parapsychologist Lloyd Auerbach. A full sit-down luncheon will be highlighted by a formal chocolate tasting, and guests will be treated to two sessions of spirit communication conducted by certified mediums Angelina Diana and Teresa Caputo. Call 631-425-7707. Again, that's 631-425-7707, or visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's Hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Michael Tim. This show is sponsored by the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. With these economic times upon us, some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show, they want to see it continue, they love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do, and yet we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find the items you're shopping for, and there are more than 900 stores, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Holidays Past raffle is in full swing. Not many raffle tickets have been purchased, so your chances of winning one or more of the 5 one-hour medium readings is very great. So send in your $5 or multiples thereof to Forever Family Foundation, 222 Atlantic Avenue, Oceanside, New York, 11572, or visit the website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, for more information on entering the raffle. Our annual conference is already set and going, and we're waiting for that night on November 12th, that whole day on November 12th, when we are going to have researchers and mediums and a wonderful luncheon highlighted by a chocolate tasting. But the night before, we've got our Friday night fundraiser, Night of Mediums, on the most spiritual night ever, 11-11-11. You don't want to miss this. Your table of 12 will be graced with a Forever Family Foundation certified medium who will, after dessert, sit and do readings for everyone at the table. So book early. That's limited seating. We only have so many mediums. We only have so many tables. Again, on the foundation website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, you'll be able to see where to click to get more information and reserve your seats. Also this year, Holidays Past, an evening of spirit communication conducted by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, is in 3 locations so far. December 3rd, we will have Joanne Gerber in Bethel, Connecticut. December 10th, Angelina Diana will be in Natick, Massachusetts, along with afterlife advocate Dave Kane. And December 17th, Teresa Caputo will be in Melville, New York. It's $25 a seat for members, $35 for non-members. Seats fill quickly, so make your reservations. I'm done now. It's up to you, Bob.
All right. Thank you. And we are talking with Michael Tim, author of The Afterlife Revealed, What Happens After We Die. The number here is 1-888-627-6008. Thanks for staying with us, Mike. One thing that I noticed, one of the many accounts in your book, one of the scientists was communicating from the spirit world, and he was interesting because he described our physical existence as a dream world. You know, and then he said that people where he was had to enter a sleep state to communicate with us. Is this something that you found a common thread? Do other people describe our existence as a dream kind of world?
Yeah, that's come through in 3 or 4. You were getting a little garbled there coming through, so I didn't get hear the full question.
Oh,
but
okay.
There have been at least a half a dozen accounts of coming from the spirit world that says our world is a dream world and their world is the real world. I mean, how we comprehend this, I don't know. I mean, there's so much that's beyond human comprehension that at a certain point you just have to throw up your hands and say, well, you know, this may very well be, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, of course, it's interesting because we always think of these other realms as the dream worlds, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah. But I know there was another account of Sir Oliver Lodge was communicating with his son Raymond, who was in spirit. And Raymond said to his father here in the physical, you know, we are more sure of the world of reality than you are. So I guess I guess they're along the same lines that, you know, what we think is reality is very, very temporary and fleeting.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's something somewhat akin to this. We may have discussed it last time. I don't remember. But people say, you know, how can you, we talk about the earthbound souls not knowing that they're dead. I mean, how can a person not know that he or she is dead? And, you know, you can ask the same question with us. I mean, when we're dreaming at night, do we know that we're alive? I mean, that you know,
yeah.
How can we know that we're alive when we're dreaming? And I think that's the same thing.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And a lot of people believe that when we do dream, we do catch glimpses of these other realms that we have a hard time reaching otherwise. So,
right.
You have accounts in the book. There are so many. One person who was recounting a near-death experience that she had, and of course that was way before that term was coined. You know, but she described, as I recall, being out of body and looking at her fiance's. Who was still in the physical, and she said something to the effect that she saw like different bodies, and that the soul body seemed to be the real body, but the actual physical one was the copy. But the interesting thing was that, you know, she said that there was a light that penetrated both, and we find this common theme of light very, very often. I mean, so in all of the research, was there a lot of discussion as light as possibly being like the essence of life?
Yeah, that comes through quite often. And one of the more interesting aspects of that is that a number of spirits have communicated that when they've tried to go to a higher realm, they can't stand the light, so they have to go back down to their own realm. They've been able. It's sort of like, you know, holding your breath underwater, as I gather it. I mean, we can hold our breath underwater for so long, and in the same sense, a spirit who might be on the third realm wants to go up to the fourth realm or the fifth realm. He can, do it, and as long as he can tolerate the light, but he can't tolerate the light that much, that long. So he's forced back to the third realm, and the same thing with that's why the spirits on the first two realms, again, if you want to put numbers to them. They try to go up, they can't stand the light, on that realm, so they're forced back to their own realm.
Yeah, and very often they also describe that light as like an overpowering love, you know. So
yeah,
light to be the same. We know from many people, many modern day accounts from near death experiences, that a large percentage of them go through a life review. It's not the same life review that maybe some of the religions teach. You know, it's not a deity or that's somebody that's sitting and passing judgment, but it seems more of self judgment. So, I mean, what does the spirit world have to say about life reviews?
Pretty much the same thing as it comes through the near-death experiences, that you judge yourself. And, there is a question as to when that judgment takes place. That's something I haven't been able to get a good handle on. And it may be that the judgment takes place at different times for different people, as I think I pointed out in the book, that, you know, some people are just not ready for a life review when they cross over. And so there might maybe some time before they have one, where others may have reviewed their life during their lifetimes, and so they don't really need a detailed life review. I try to review my own life, and I think I've done a pretty good job of looking back and retrospectively you know, things that I've messed up on and maybe some good things that I've done. And so I don't know if I have a life review, if there's going to be that much that comes out of it that's going to, that I haven't already considered. But
so you've been practicing.
Yeah.
Practicing and preparing.
Yeah, so I'd like to think I don't really need a, you know, a detailed one, but maybe I do. I, you know, just not aware of it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess we have a different perspective where we're going than when we try to do it here in the physical. I mean,
right.
Do you think that spirit, entities in spirit are always looking for new ways to communicate with us, or is it, does it reach a point where, well, we tried this, we did that, and, you know, they might give up? I mean, are they being inventive in different ways? Is it, you think it's important for them to get through to us?
I think it is, and I think one of the reasons we don't have, you know, that the mediumship of today isn't as good as it was, you know, 100 years ago, and I'm sure some people will argue that, but, you know, we don't have the direct voice, you know, good direct voice mediumship or trans voice mediumship that we had. I mean, we have the clairvoyant and clairaudient type, which, as you mentioned, is predominant today. But I think, yeah, at some point, the spirits became frustrated and said, you know, we're not getting through, you know. If William James came through today, or some Emanuel Swedenborg or somebody that, you know, was well known, would anybody believe it? I mean, who's going to believe, you know, some medium that lives in Scranton, Pennsylvania, that William James is communicating through her? And, you know, early on, you know, they may have, because it was very unusual, but and, you know, certain information came through that was evidential in some respects, but the world is too skeptical today. I think, you know, nobody would believe it. So why would William James or Emanuel Swedenborg even try or attempt to come through?
Yeah, I can see that point. You know, today, most mediums rarely give you any insight into what it's like on the afterlife, and if you ask them, they'll tell you pretty much up front that they really have no idea. You know, they focus mainly on, you know, on the evidence and the communication. But for some reason, you know, spirit doesn't convey to them, you know, what life is like there. And maybe it's just too difficult, or maybe they feel that they can't get that concept across.
Yeah, I think it's sort of a point of diminishing returns that was reached about 50 years ago or so, and they said, you know, we've given as much as we can give. You know, what, you know, what's the point of continuing to give the same information over and over again, and, you know, reinventing the wheel, so to speak?
Yeah. Now, people can follow. I know you write a regular blog. We look forward to them. Some people may recognize your name because we've published some of your articles in our own newsletter, and we thank you for that. But Michael Tim writes a very interesting blog in which he takes many of these cases in history through astounding mediums of yesteryear and very qualified scientists from the other side, and he presents these interesting cases. Some of them read like a mystery novel, you know, so they're very, very interesting. People can go on the web to whitecrowbooks.com/Michael Tim. And as I mentioned, if you forget that, just, you know, Google Michael Tim, and that blog comes right up. And I would recommend, it's fascinating reading, that you take get a copy of The Afterlife Revealed, What Happens After We Die. We do have an Amazon link to that book on the Forever Family Foundation website, and that will, you know, remain up on the website. So, Mike, I thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to have you. Be sure to let me know. Are you already working on another book?
Actually, I am. Two metaphysical. One is more of an encyclopedia of all these people we've talked about, the old time researchers and mediums, and the other one is I'm doing a biography of Leonora Piper, which the only biography that's been done on her that I know of is it was done by her daughter back in 1929, and it wasn't very comprehensive, so I thought that I would attempt one on her.
All right. Well, we look forward to reading it. So thanks again, and aloha for you down in Hawaii. Michael happens to be in Hawaii, and we can all be jealous.
Mike. Thank you, Bob and Fran. I appreciate having me on.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Vicki Steffi, Judith Lockman, Wendy Lippo, Kathy Ward, Nick Hargraves, Michael Tim, and all the victims still of the Japan tsunami. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, plankton, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was by Masaru Omoto back on May 9th, 2010, with the Gulf tragedy, which we're still worried about, all of the life there in the Gulf.
And remember that our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.